Somyanu soche tamabha patantam. Ratne paritaya vidu druheyaha. Nirayapito yena surit svapurya. Aham saputran samanubratena.
O gentle one, I simply lament for he, Dhritarashtra, who rebelled against his own brother after death. By him I was driven out of my own house, although I am his sincere well-wisher, because he accepted the line of action adopted by his own sons. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Vidura did not ask about the welfare of his elder brother, because there was no chance of his well-being, only news of his gliding down to hell. Vidura was a sincere well-wisher for Dhritarashtra, and he had a thought about him in the corner of his heart. He lamented that Dhritarashtra could rebel against the sons of his dead brother, Pandu, and that he could drive him, Vidura, out of his own house on the dictation of his crooked sons. In spite of these actions, Vidura never became an enemy of Dhritarashtra, but continued to be his well-wisher. And at the last stage of Dhritarashtra's life, it was Vidura only who proved to be his real friend. Such is the behavior of a Vaishnava like Vidura. He desires all good, even for his enemies. The qualitative nature of a genuine Vaishnava is here so explicitly exemplified by Vidura. It is said that the greatest service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to show compassion to other living beings. And the extent by which one can show compassion to those souls in illusion is here portrayed by the life of Vidura. Dhritarashtra was his own brother. Yet how Dhritarashtra personally participated in abusing Vidura Dhritarashtra knew very well that Vidura was his only real friend. He understood that throughout his life, Vidura gave him excellent guidance. But due to his attachment to the material bondage of father and son relationship, he went against Vidura to the extent that he was part of a conspiracy of threatening Vidura's very life and exiling him from his home and his kingdom. What was Vidura's fault? Only that he loved Dhritarashtra. That's all. If he did not love him, he would not have tried to help him. But sometimes people who are an illusion, they do not understand because of their bondage to material attachments. Attachment to materialistic people or people who are too much associating with materialistic ideas is a source of great bondage. And it could even create an atmosphere where you make offenses against those who really care about you. No one can hardly say that they have been abused by anyone as much as Vidura could say he was abused. He was literally thrown out into the forest without even allowed to be taking anything with him. And he was terribly insulted with the most cruel and harsh words. And obviously, it is quite clear that the kingdom of Hastinapur, the innocent citizens must be thinking, the great Vidura, where did he go? Why was he exiled? So Duryodhana, with the consent of Dhritarashtra, surely must have told everyone all kinds of blasphemous lies to justify him being kicked out of the kingdom. What could be more painful than that? Even his own family, he was separated from for the rest of his life. Vidura is remembering not only the offenses that were committed against him, but also against other devotees. Pandu was the well-wishing, loving brother of Dhritarashtra also. Also the brother of Vidura. And what greater offense can you make against somebody than going against that person's will, insulting him, and betraying that which that person loves most after his death? Usually, even if you do not like someone, after they die, you have some nice things to say about them. After they die, you try to think nicely about that person, because after all, he can no longer harm you. So why not? It's just the basic respect of human civilization. Pandu and Dhritarashtra were always friends. There was not competition amongst them. They worked together in so many ways for their kingdom. And Pandu, his life and soul were his five children, Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula and Sahadev. They were born of great, great devatas to his wives Kunti and Madri. And they were the oceanic minds of good qualities. And they were small little children. And Pandu loved them so dearly. A man in this world, when he comes close to death, and he knows the inevitable is about to happen, usually they start thinking about their children. What can I do for them? There's not much I can do for me anymore. Of course, you could chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhood. But materialistic people, they think in terms of their extensions, which is their children. Man lives through his sons and daughters. So in the world today, we see people are going to lawyers and making their wills, their last will and testaments, that this factory I give to this son, and this house I give to this son, and this jewelry I give to this daughter, and all of that. And then there'll be no question of the children fighting, because everyone knows whose is whose. And then a man can think, oh, at least I'm doing something good for my children, so I can rest in peace. And then he dies. That's the way the world is. But it is natural that you want to make sure that your children, your wife, those who are dear to you, are well settled and well protected before you die. So Pandu, obviously he loved his children perhaps more than we can love our children. If your child was Maharaj Yudhisthira, how much would you love him? Hare Krishna. Even if we have a child who's just a spoiled brat, we love him. What to speak, a lying cheater? What to speak? You have a child like Arjuna or Bhima. Such noble, virtuous, pure, saintly people who are so qualified and so talented and who will make the name of your family famous forever. How much will you be attached to that child? So how would a person honor and show their respect and love for Pandu? By how they honor and respect his children after he leaves. That's the obvious human behavior. So Vidura is remembering how after Pandu left, he was the well-wisher of the Pandavas. He knew their glory and their greatness. He knew how pleasing it would be to Pandu for him to be like the father to them and take care of them. Actually, that was what was expected. That Dhritarashtra would be the foster father and take care of these beautiful young children in the absence of Pandu, the brother. But Duryodhana, he understood the Pandavas were very qualified. And he was envious of them. He was the very personification of envy. In Pandu's presence, he had very little scope to exercise his envy. But in the absence of Pandu, he understood his father's weakness was his attachment to him. The greatest weakness in all of existence is material attachment. And Maya knows that. Therefore, Maya knows she could conquer you to the extent you have material attachments. She can put you in illusion to the extent you have material attachments. And family life is one of the greatest attachments, unless it is purely exhibited and expressed in Krishna consciousness. It is naturally to be attached to the members of family. But if we are not attached to them in a way that diverts our attention away from our service to Krishna, but we are attached to them in including them and getting them to participate in service to Krishna, then that attachment is good for you and good for them. But if that attachment creates a situation where it detaches you from Krishna or the line of Dharma, then that attachment is the great weakness that Maya will play with just to make you fall into her hands. And in those clutches, your whereabouts will be unknown. So this is something that all intelligent people should understand. Real strength is detachment. And real weakness is attachment. People can be very, very strong physically and very strong intellectually and very strong charismatically. But if they have attachments, how Maya makes them fall? We have seen. What is the story? Anthony and Cleopatra. Anthony was a great general, a great hero. He was beloved by everyone. But somehow or other, Maya just personified in his life as this Egyptian Mataji. And he lost everything. He just became, he engaged in terrible cowardice activities. And he lost his reputation, he lost his fame, he lost his position in the Roman society. And ultimately, he was so frustrated, he lost his life. He took his own life. He was in the top of the world, but one attachment, and everything was spoiled. And if you look at the history of humanity, you look at the history of the fall downs of great personalities because of attachments. In the country of America, Srila Prabhupada would often use the example of the president of his time, Mr. Nixon. Maya nixed him. She nixed Nixon. And how did she nix Nixon? Because he was attached. He was president and he was attached to that position. So he arranged all kinds of divisive, clever ways to hold his position. And what was the result? He was condemned, he was criticized, he was insulted. He became the embarrassment of the nation forever. The most greatest embarrassment to the United States in the history of the office of president. And he knew it. And he had to live with that for the rest of his life. And nobody wanted to even look at him. Because of an attachment. And sometimes people do their work and they get old and they can't really do it any longer. But they just hold on because of their attachment. And then everyone he's just ruining everything, this person. Just retire. Just get out. Just cannot give up. And everything, a person builds up his whole life to be great because he won't give it up. Everyone just condemns him at the end. This is material life. And we have seen so many people. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, one time one of his disciples, he left Krishna consciousness because of attachment to his wife. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati began to cry. He said, "It is my fault, I was not able to save him." Any material attachment you have is your weakness. And Maya is definitely going to utilize that weakness to try to drag, to try to get you to compromise the principles of real devotion and drag you away from Krishna. Not maybe.
Definitely.
You may not know how she's doing it, but she's already doing it. And she'll continue to do it. So therefore, we have to purify our attachments. Either we should use them for Krishna, or we should give them up. But somehow or other, we should always utilize whatever attachments that are naturally with us in this world to help us become more attached to Krishna and to help others become attached to Krishna. If one is detached, one has unlimited strength. Because what can anyone do to you if you're detached? In the Western world, there was Socrates. He was just a philosopher. He was a sadhu. He was a Greek sadhu. He didn't have much. He just had his philosophy, that's all. And he was bold. He could speak anything to anyone at any time because he wasn't afraid of death. He wasn't afraid of losing anything. He had nothing to lose. So the rulers, they didn't like his philosophy because if people become too intelligent and you cannot control them and manipulate them and exploit them. So generally, powerful people, they like to keep others in ignorance. They may start so many universities and so many educational systems just to perpetuate ignorance. Because the more complex you are in ignorance, the more difficult it is to get out of ignorance. A person who's illiterate, living on a farm, who doesn't know anything, you tell him, "Do you know you're in ignorance?" He says, "Of course I know." "Would you like knowledge?" "Yes." "You're not this body. Chant Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare." But a person who has gone through 8 years of preliminary school and 4 years of secondary school and 4 years of college and university and 2 years for a master's degree and another 4 years for a PhD and has read so many books and have so many degrees, you say, "Are you in ignorance?" He'll say, "How dare you say that? Just look at my certificates." "Do you want to know what is knowledge?" "I already know what is knowledge." But the person, "I know what is knowledge. Knowledge is I am my body, and those things in relation to my body are mine. That is knowledge." And you ask them to chant, chant, chant. "Can't, can't, can't. Too busy." So therefore, material civilization creates, Maya through material civilization creates wonderful, wonderful ways to keep people in ignorance. And the best way is to think you know. So leaders of, materialistic leaders of civilizations, they want to keep people in ignorance because if they understand the truth and become detached, nobody can control them. So Socrates was like this. And he was giving people intelligence. And he was threatening the whole kingdom. So they captured him. And they had him in prison, in chains. And they had poison. They said, "Drink this poison, we will kill you." He said, "Oh, you want to kill me? First you have to find me." They were looking at him. "We already found you." "I'm not..." What he meant is, "I'm not this body, I'm this soul. You find my soul and kill it. Try." He didn't mind. And when his disciples were lamenting, "Oh, you are going to die," he said, "Why are you dying? I'm not this body. Why are you crying?" So he happily drank his poison because he was detached. So detachment is power. And attachment is weakness. And here we find that Dhritarashtra, in the absence of Pandu, he was the king of the planet Earth. He was the Raj of the Kurus. But because of his attachment to his envious son, everything was spoiled. And Vidura was trying to give him intelligence. But even despite all Vidura's good wishes, how Dhritarashtra completely betrayed and insulted his own brother's good wishes. What was dearmost to the Pandavas, Dhritarashtra was in a conspiracy to assassinate, to kill them, to burn them to death, to poison them to death, to insult them, to derobe their wife in public, to exile them to the forest to live like hermits. What an insult this is to Pandu. He was supposed to be caring for the sons on behalf of Pandu. What to speak of the insult to Kunti Devi? Kunti Devi was such a pure-hearted mother. She could never think offensively to anyone. She didn't have that in her power of her heart. She was such a loving, forgiving woman. Helpless widow, depending on Dhritarashtra to support her. And he made all arrangements to burn her alive along with her sons. This is called Vaishnav Aparad. And yet, Vidura is remembering Dhritarashtra with affection and compassion. Srila Prabhupada so sensitively perceives the difference between how Vidura is speaking about Dhritarashtra and everyone else he spoke about previously. When Vidura met Uddhava after long absence from all of his family member and friends, he was inquiring as to the welfare of each of them. He inquired, how is Krishna and Balaram, the life and soul of all living beings? And how is their father, Vasudev? And how is Devaki? And how is the great king, Ugrasena? And how is Krishna's son, Pradyumna, and his grandson, Aniruddha? And how is Yudhana, that great personality? And he was inquiring about Akrura, that very, very virtuous devotee of the Lord. He was asking about the activities and the welfare of so many devotees and Krishna himself. But when it came to Dhritarashtra, note, Vidura did not ask how he was, because there was no use asking. A person who behaves in a cruel way and is offensive to the Lord's devotee cannot be good. All he could do is glide down to hell. For some time, Dhritarashtra was sitting on his throne with his crown and his scepter and the whole world at his feet. And Duryodhana was the Yuvaraj. He was the prince that was meant to be the next king. For so many years, it appeared like this. But Vidura, he understood. There was no question that they were rightly situated. There was no question that there was anything good about their lives. Because they were offensive, they were gliding to hell. Whether the world could see it now or not, it is just a matter of time. Krishna says, time I am. And in the form of time, Krishna reveals everything to everyone.
if you have the eyes to see. The truth always comes out in due course of time. Nothing can be concealed. You can conceal things in your heart, you can conceal things amongst friends, you can conceal things in so many ways, but in due course of time, you will be exposed. Krishna will do it in the form of time, either in this life or later. In the country of the United States, the first president, George Washington, everyone was thinking he's such a great man for so many years. But then they later find out through all kinds of historical records that he had other affairs with other women and everything. And now when people think of George Washington, they think, he was a good fighter, but not a very good person. So what to do? Krishna reveals. We might as well just be honest. I'm a fallen soul. Krishna, Mahaprabhu, you are Patita Pavana. Please save me. I'm fallen. Rather than, I am very great. And then Krishna will reveal if you're not very great. It will all be revealed. Therefore, the great never think they're great. The great feel their fall. The great are grateful. Grateful means you're full of greatness. Spelled differently. Because if you're actually feeling yourself really, really fallen, anything anyone gives you, you're grateful for. Because you feel you don't deserve it. Any mercy Krishna gives you, if you think you deserve it, you're not grateful. If you think you deserve it, what Krishna gives you, you say, why this? Why not this? Krishna gives you mercy. Well, why somebody else got better mercy than me? What is this? It's not fair. Why are you doing this, Krishna? Don't you understand who I am, what I've done? But a devotee who thinks he's fallen, anything, if he gets one little scrap of mercy, if he gets one little chapati, he's grateful. Person who thinks he's very great, you give him a chapati, he says, why no ghee is on my chapati? And you put ghee on his chapati, he says, where's my sabji? And then you give him sabji and he says, where is my ladu and my halwa? Why, what is this? What kind of temple do you have? But a grateful person thinks, I don't deserve anything. I deserve to be starving in hell. And he gave me a chapati, such causeless mercy. Krishna, you are wonderful. And your devotees are wonderful. That person is great. A grateful person is full of greatness. But unfortunately, a proud person cannot open his heart to receive the mercy of the Lord. And therefore that person is in the greatest poverty. Because he cannot accept the great spiritual riches of Krishna's mercy. Vidura and Dhritarashtra, their relationship is a very, very sacred lesson to the world. Dhritarashtra had big, 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 big position. But Vidura only saw that he was in the most lamentable position, and he knew as a fact that it is just a matter of time till Krishna reveals everything. So what was the end result? We all know. Duryodhana died a miserable death, suffering terrible pain. All of his 99 brothers were destroyed, and Duryodhana knew it was all my fault. He fought with Bhima. He had a broken spine. Can you imagine having Bhima hit you with all his might, with his own mace on the spine of your back? Can you imagine what pain you would be having and live through it? Think about that. Sometimes we have a backache and we're laying down. I can't do any service today. I can't even chant my rounds today because my back is hurting. Bhima, with that same club, he was hitting elephants on the head, and their skulls were cracking and blood was flowing, and the elephant would just fall dead. Hare Krishna. And not just ordinary elephants, but the Kuru warrior elephants, the biggest, most strong elephants in the world. Just one smash and the elephants would die. With more strength, he hit Duryodhana in his spine and in his thighs. And is laying there in so much pain and just thinking, all these millions of people on the battlefield were killed because of my greed. And all my brothers are dead because of my greed. And my whatever fame I tried to protect throughout my life, now the whole world will always think of me for the rest of history as a demon, as an envious rascal. You know how much he was suffering? While he was laying there dying. And Dhritarashtra had to see that. And in the end, Vidura, even after all these injustices, he was the one that came to Dhritarashtra in his hour of need. Yudhisthira was a similar great Vaishnava. Yudhisthira endured all the offenses that Dhritarashtra created against him. And yet, when Dhritarashtra was in a helpless position, Yudhisthira said, please come and live with me. And Yudhisthira Maharaj cared for him, fed him, showed so much love, and even respected him as a king. But Vidura, he went back to Dhritarashtra and he preached to him. Same thing he preached throughout his life to Dhritarashtra. But after everything was taken away and his ego was crushed, then Dhritarashtra was receptive. This time when Vidura preached to him, Dhritarashtra said, yes, I will come with you to become Krishna conscious, to purify my life. So Srila Prabhupada explains that only Vidura proved to be his real friend. Such is the behavior of a Vaishnava like Vidura. He desires all good, even for his enemies. Tatikshava karuna ka surada sarvadehena majata satrava sada sarva sadhushanam. These are the qualities of a sadhu, a devotee. He's the well-wisher of every living being. He has no enemies. People may see you as an enemy, and you may attack a person's diseased condition. But because you see every living being as part of Krishna, You only have love and compassion for the person, the soul, of every creature on earth. This is the quality of a devotee. He's always looking for the opportunity to help everyone. Lord Nityananda Prabhu, although Jagayan Madhai insulted him, and Madhai even smashed him on the head and made his head bleed, Madhai's desire was to kill him. And yet Nityananda Prabhu's only desire in reciprocation was to save Madhai, to pray for him, to risk his life to help him. If someone came and cracked you on the head and made you bleed profusely, and he was about to hit you again and again until you died, and someone came to punish that person, most of us would say, "Ah, and finish that rascal's life." But Nityananda said, "No, don't hurt him, please. Whatever devotion I've done, whatever pious activities I've done, I'll trade it all in just to protect this person." Give him bhakti, give him devotion. The greatest reward he wanted to give to this person who tried to kill him. That is the glory of a Vaishnava. Haridas Thakur was being beaten and blasphemed with only one objective: make him suffer and die. That's all. These people beating him, they only wanted him to suffer and die, and make him look like the worst germ in the earth before the people in general. And Vishnu wanted to sever those demons' heads, but he couldn't, because Haridas Thakur was praying so intensely, "Lord, please forgive them. Please forgive them. Give them devotion." Those are the kinds of people we should make friends with. A real Vaishnava is the only person who is a real friend. Not people who like you and help you because of some material attachment to you. We can have nice fun with this person, but if the fun goes away, the person goes away. Who is our real friend? Those who want to help us to reunite with Krishna. Only. That is the definition of a real friend. Those who bring us back to the ultimate supreme friend, Krishna. And devotees should become that kind of friend, not only to the conditioned souls, but with each other. If we're preaching this high message to others, but we can't be friends with each other in this level, or at least aspiring to be on this level, then what is our realization? We should cultivate this type of friendship with other Vaishnavas. Man and wife should develop this type of friendship between each other. Not sex partners, like it is in the West. Not just, we're here together as a contract to raise these children, somehow or other. Not like that. Or not by the will of Providence, we are in the same caste and we are of the same nation, and now we are husband and wife and we have these children, so that's not. But the type of friend who was willing to risk anything, endure anything to help you to be Krishna conscious. That is a real friend. That is how husband and wife should be with each other. That is how God-sister and God-sister should be with each other. Why fighting over who should wash the pot or who said this about who? All these trivial little things come between our friendships. What nonsense. We can so easily turn against each other or have friction with each other because some little thing is said against us. But did they say anything against you more than Dhritarashtra did to Vidura? More than Madhai did to Nityananda? And Kunti Devi, she loved Dhritarashtra. Prayed for his good wishes. That's what kind of ladies we should be. So God sisters should become such deep, intimate friends. Not only God sisters in the sense of same guru, but same tradition amongst Vaishnavas. It begins there, within Prabhupada's family. How ladies should be God sisters. Real friends to each other on this level. And how the men should be God brothers on this level. Amongst the brahmacharis. If this ashram is going to be really a spiritually surcharged brahmachari ashram, it is based on this principle. That the brahmacharis make very, very deep friendship on the basis of serving others. Vidura did not want to be the master of Dhritarashtra. He wanted to serve him. Serve at any expense, being willing to tolerate any injustice. But somehow or other help this person to come closer to Krishna and be happy. And no matter what comes in our life, we will never be separated. We will never betray each other. Maya, in this age of Kali Yuga, is terribly powerful at trying to create disintegration and segregation. This is the weapon of Kali, to create quarrel, hypocrisy, conflict, distrust. And therefore you cannot be a real friend. And these things will come. You cannot run from it. All you can do is go back to Godhead. That's the only way out. But you can't go back to Godhead unless you become a real friend of the Vaishnavas and accept the friendship of a Vaishnava. So this kind of loving association is so important. Amongst the brahmacharis, amongst the grihastha men with each other, amongst the ladies with each other, amongst the grihastha men with the brahmacharis, amongst the brahmacharis toward the women, from a respectful distance. Because if it gets too close, you're no longer friends. Because if it gets too close, what happens? You're endangering that person. If a woman treats a brahmachari too closely, physically, she's endangering that person's vows. Therefore, she becomes his enemy, not his friend. It's not a sentimental friendship. That we just talk and we talk and we talk. Oh, I just want to be your friend. If you want to be a friend, help me, save me. Don't endanger my survival. So there should be respectful communication. But it should be done with great, with the love of a Vaishnava as a friend. Never to be harsh. Never to be proud and think I am better. A real friend is a humble servant.
not a proud master. So in this way, the whole Vaishnav society, all our interactions should be based on love and trust and real friendship with real integrity and knowledge. And this is how Vidura is teaching us. And if you can have a friend like Vidura, you will be saved. But you have to seek such friendship. And if you can be a friend like Vidura, then you'll see you have many friends like Vidura. If you be a friend of others, you will be amazed how many friends you have. If you're not able to be a real friend to others, you won't be able to recognize anyone as being your friend. Because Krishna will not even if people are so unconditionally trying to help you, if you're not trying to help them, Krishna will not even allow you to see the truth that these are my friends. And that is the reality. Duryodhana could not see that Vidura was his friend. But Vidura could see everyone in a compassionate spirit. And of course, the definition of a true friend is to help your friend when that friend is in need. And in this world, everyone is in need. And the only solution to our problem is Krishna consciousness. And the only means of attaining Krishna consciousness is to follow the principles that Krishna has given us. Beginning with associating with devotees. And when we're talking about association of devotees, in its true sense, we are talking about a society that is being described in this class today. That is real association of devotees. Association of people who really want to help each other to be with Krishna. By hearing about Krishna together, by discussing Krishna together, by serving Krishna together, by uniting under the harmony of the will of Guru together, by taking prasad together, by giving gifts to each other, by serving each other, and by coming together in the temple, raising our arms, dancing in great happiness, and loudly chanting the holy names together. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes.
But because of friendship, the natural consequence is familiarity. So how to avoid familiarity breeding contempt? We just know the person so close and...
We want to become very familiar. But on the basis of Krishna, not on the basis of Maya. Familiarity breeds contempt when our familiarity is centered around sense gratification, gross or subtle. But when our familiarity is centered around devotional service, that familiarity breeds love. So what do we talk about when we are together? What do we do when we are together? Are we talking about other devotees in a sense-gratifying way? Because everyone's mind loves gossip and rumors, unless they're
very advanced. We like to hear it. It's exciting. It's exciting about hearing about how devotees have deviated and fallen down and who made mistakes. We can't watch television, but we can dovetail our propensity to watch television to hear about the scandals amongst the Vaishnavas. It's very... To the crows, this garbage is very sweet. So that kind of discussion is not... That type of familiarity would breed contempt. Because now the two of you are talking about somebody else. But lo and behold, the day will be that that person will be talking about you, Harivo. And you will be talking about him or her. So that familiarity will breed contempt. And what we do together, if we're going out shopping for the deities, then you'll become very good friends forever. But if you're going out shopping just so that you can look very glamorous or handsome together, the latest fashions, that type of familiarity will inevitably breed contempt. So if Krishna is in the center of our relationship, the deeper and more close our relationship becomes, the greater love will unlimitedly grow between us. And therefore, we have to really very, very strongly tolerate these urges for prajalpa and unnecessary activities. Does that answer your question? Yes,
Siddhartha. Hare Krishna. Maharaj, you spoke about material attachment. Now, today we are living in a world sort of where there is, you know, in working environment is extremely competitive. There is a tendency that if you don't do your job well, you lose your job. Now, in such a competitive atmosphere, there is a tendency to feel that if I'm not really attached to my job, I cannot put my heart and soul into it, and I cannot do my job well. So, how do we deal with this situation?
The attachment should not be to the job. The attachment should be to the purpose fulfilled through your job. And if you're utilizing your job for the service of Krishna, the fruits of your work for the service of Krishna. If you have a family and you're raising your family in Krishna consciousness and you're trying to assist Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada and the Vaishnavas, then actually you're working for that. You're not working for the employer. Directly, it may appear that way, but actually you're working for your family. And you're working for yourself. And you're working for whatever you use your money for. So if the purpose of our working is service to Krishna, then the attachment should be to the purpose. Then you can work very hard as anyone. Arjuna and Duryodhana were both doing the same work. And they were both attached. Duryodhana was fighting that war with great attachment. Do you agree? And Arjuna was also fighting that war with great attachment. And therefore they were both working to their maximum ultimate capacity, both of them. But Duryodhana's purpose was his own selfish motivations. And Arjuna's motive was the service of Krishna. So you can do your job in the spirit of Duryodhana, or you can perform your job in the spirit of Arjuna. Your attachment should be to the purpose you are fulfilling through that job. And if we're hearing about Krishna and chanting the names of Krishna sincerely and associating with Krishna's devotee,
then we will become attached to the goal of life. And then we will perform our job in pursuance of the goal of life. Does that answer your question? So you should work with attachment. And you should work hard, better than anyone, according to your capacity. But the attachment should be to Krishna, in service to Krishna, in service to Krishna's devotees.
Maharaj, when you are trying to cultivate somebody in Krishna consciousness, at that time people are receptive to certain things and not receptive to certain things. But there are some things which are really hampering in their progress towards Krishna consciousness. But at the same time they are not receptive to listen. Sometimes they are not receptive to those things which are really hampering in their Krishna conscious progress. So in that non-receptive condition, shall we pursue telling them about the same things or just ignore those things and just tell them to chant Hare Krishna? When we are cultivating someone in Krishna consciousness, they are receptive to certain things and not receptive to those other things, which is really hampering in their progress.
You are asking whether we should only tell them what they like or whether we should tell them everything.
Everything. In the given conditions.
It is best if you tell them what will help them most advance in Krishna consciousness. If you tell them what they do not like, but they're willing to listen, then that's very good for them. Because they should know. If you tell them in a way that they trust you and they know that you care about them and that they do not think you are criticizing them, then they will listen. In preaching, especially to devotees as well as to guests and the people in general, how you say it is as important as what you say. If you say it in a mood that I am great and you are small and I am going to give you the qualification to follow in my footsteps. If you have that demeanor, people will not want to listen very carefully. But if you have the mood, whoever you're preaching to, I'm really concerned with you. I'm your servant. My Guru Maharaj has given me this wonderful message. I want to share it with you. Please understand this. And people will listen. When Narada Muni was speaking to Maharaj Prachini Barhishat, he told him everything, all the things he didn't want to hear. But he spoke it in such a humble and gentle way that the king didn't even know he was talking about him until the end. But then he already heard it all, so it was too late. He pretended to be talking about somebody else. That is an expert preacher. An expert preacher is one who changes a person's heart and raises a person's consciousness. And you should say the needful in such a way that you will actually help that person. We should not be self-righteous, that we just beat a person on the head with the truth until he's knocked unconscious and runs away. We should present the truth in such a way that will inspire, enlighten that person's heart and enthuse that person to be Krishna conscious. That is a preacher. that answer your question?
In case of Vidura, he was humble, he was most concerned about welfare of Dhritarashtra, he was, whatever needed to be a preacher, he had all these qualities. And he was telling Dhritarashtra all throughout whatever is good for him, and still he didn't listen to him and he still continued telling him.
That means you cannot be attached to the fruits of your actions. You just perform your service the best way you possibly can. Vidura told him the truth, even though it was not palatable to him. But he told it to him as such a well-wishing, loving friend. Immediately it did not take effect. But actually, in the end, it did. Because Vidura preached with such love and kindness to Dhritarashtra, the truth, throughout his life, at the end, Dhritarashtra actually knew that he is my friend, he cares about me, and at the end he listened and became saved. So whatever Vidura did for Dhritarashtra, it wasn't just at the end it happened. He built enough trust and love in the heart of Dhritarashtra toward his good intentions that in the end he could preach to him and save his life.
So we should keep trying. Still end.
Please. Give hope to my life and keep trying. Someday, with the compassion and mercy of Vaishnavas like you, there is great hope for everyone.
Maharaj, in the initial stage, you mentioned about Vaishnava stands for all appealing quality, compassion, and you talked about offenses. Now, offenses can be harmful to a person in the sense to the devotional service of a person. And to what extent and how far can you be compassionate to a person who may be receptive or not receptive to your compassionate gestures?
To what extent should you be compassionate to a person who may not accept your service? That is the question?
Yeah, I know, in a sense.
There should be no limit to how much we are trying to help others become Krishna conscious. There should be no limit. However, sometimes we have to be expert enough through our own spiritual realization to understand what will actually help a person most. Because your question is very general and it can be approached from so many different directions. Sometimes compassion means to punish a person. If a person is misbehaving, sometimes it's good to punish that person so that they understand that they're leading the wrong type of life. In other words, sometimes we chastise. You may have heard Prabhupada's stories about his chastising lilas. That was with as much compassion as his nice encouraging lilas. Because his compassion was to somehow or other do whatever is necessary to help you understand and to help you to overcome your weaknesses and your illusions. So compassion can take many forms, but our motivation and our realization should be to serve that person, to help that person. And if a person is not responding very much, then again it is a matter of time and circumstance. If it is a devotee who has given many years of life, we should give special attention to that devotee, knowing how dear it will be to Krishna. If that person has not done much, so much, we should try to give as much as we can to him or her. But if we have limited time and other people are anxious to hear
and you neglect them because you're spending all your time trying to give compassion to someone who doesn't want it, then that is not a very good utilization of our time. So it's important to manage our time very efficiently, because there are so many people who need to hear this message and who need the compassion of the Vaishnavas. And therefore, we should naturally, if our time is limited, we should put the most of our energy to those people who are willing to accept and receive it. Do you understand?
Yeah, and but I want a specific on offenses, in the sense that somebody has committed an offense against you, and a mind is a way which has caused pain to you. A mind is a way of, you know, sort of sticking that offense in your mind, and it keeps coming, cropping up at all times. And even if you understand the fact, compassion is a good quality to cultivate, it isn't, I mean, it doesn't sort of easily come. It's by cultivation, even that quality gets somewhere manifested. So, you know, you're struggling with your offenses at the same time, you want to be compassionate, and then how do you, isn't it sometimes?
If someone commits offense against you, you should be very willing to forgive that person immediately. You should think that I have committed so many offenses against so many people in so many lifetimes that this person is just the deliverer of my own karma. This person is not to blame. I am to blame. Hare Krishna. We should not take serious offenses that people commit against us. We should take seriously offenses we commit against them. That is the sign of humility. If you're humble, you will think, I deserve so much worse. You have spoken bad against me, but actually you should be shooting me with guns and stabbing me with knives and cutting me with hatchets and putting poison in my food and everything else. That's what I deserve. And you're just saying some nasty thing? Actually, you are very, very lenient. Thank you. We may not speak like this, but this is how a devotee thinks. And if you have that humility, you will not be upset if somebody says something against you. You'll take it as an opportunity to make spiritual advancement, as we were saying yesterday. A devotee in crisis sees the opportunity to make spiritual advancement. If someone mistreats you, you could think, if I can respect and be nice to this person, I'll go back to Godhead. I will make so much advancement if I can do that. Therefore, this person is giving me such a wonderful opportunity for spiritual advancement. He or she may not know that they're doing this, but Krishna is using this person as an instrument to give me the chance to become very, very dear to the Lord. So you should see like this. I remember one great soul. So many people committed so many offenses against this devotee. Very, very senior Vaishnava. He was senior to everyone. And so many people did so many offenses. And I saw with my own eyes, when devotees begged forgiveness, he began to cry. He said, I am a criminal. You cannot make an offense against a criminal. Krishna will torture you if you commit offense to such a person. But the person doesn't even think it's an offense. Srivas Thakur, when Gopal Chapala tried to ruin his reputation for all the people of Navadvip, Gopal Chapala said, you're right. He was right. Everything he said against me is correct. So when people make offenses against us, we should understand that this is actually Krishna giving us a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to make great, great spiritual advancement. But when people make offenses against other Vaishnavas, or against our Guru, or against Krishna, then we should be willing to fight. But when people commit offenses against us, we should humbly accept it for our purification and become purified.
Hare Krishna.
Trinarapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnana amani namanadena kirtaniya sudara.
To be more tolerant, be more humble than the blade of grass. How many offenses people put to grass? They step on it, they spit on it, they pass urine and stool on it, they throw things on it, they sit on it. How would you like people stepping on your head and sitting on your head and spitting on your head and passing urine and stool on your head? Would you consider that an offense if someone did that to you? But if you're more humble than a grain of grass, you will say, as long as I'm helping you, go on, it's all right. That's what it means to be more humble than a blade of grass. And more tolerant than a tree. We cut the trees, we hang on the trees. We do so many things to the trees. And the trees still giving you shade and giving you heat. Tree can sit in the sun, can sit in the cold, never complain. Ready to offer all respect to others and expect no respect for yourself. You're only offended when you want respect. If you don't want respect, Krishna may see someone has offended you, but you won't see that. If we have this consciousness, offering all respect to others and expecting none for ourselves, that's wonderful. If you're offering all respect to others and expecting none in yourself for yourself, that means if someone offends you, you respect him. Correct? If you have this consciousness, if you want this consciousness, if you pray for and strive for this consciousness, then you can chant constantly the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna.